So what comes to mind when you think about Nike, besides Michael Jordan? Athleticism, commitment, excellence. You don't just think about a shoe. It means a lot more to you than that. If it didn't, you'd probably be at Walmart buying those $20 generic black sneakers. Okay, well, still maybe not. But the point is that the brand makes a connection that's bigger than shoes. Brand is an experience. It's not just simply a logo or a catchphrase. And it's an experience that represents who you are, not just the products that you sell. It's an edge in a world of declining consumer loyalty. When you build a worthwhile brand that means something to your community of buyers, you build a tribe, which I'll talk about another episode of the KPI Cafe this season. As a dealership and as a local salesperson, you're not trying to sell people all over the nation. You know, can you have someone purchase a car from you across state? Sure. But have you done all you can to capture and dominate your backyard? And have you built a brand that keeps it? Your marketing draws people in. Your brand helps keep them. When you couple great marketing, branding, and customer experience, you're setting yourself up for long-term success. So again, how are you building a brand that speaks to your local community? Well, to get there, you need to acquire the basics of building your own brand. And I have someone who's clearly embraced it over the past year, Melanie Borden. It's funny. This is 2 weeks in a row now. I'm re-filming this opening, re-recording this opening because there have been changes. Last week, Maria, a friend of ours from Suburban Collection, moved on to an agency. And Melanie Borden, formerly of Celebrity Motor Cars, is now the VP of marketing at LotLinx. So congratulations to her again. And, you know, just like I said with Maria, Melanie's role might have changed. Her company might have changed, but her insights and her perspective are just as valuable than ever before. Especially on branding. So let's go ahead and sink her in. And we're back here, another KPI Cafe. And we're going to be talking about branding, right? I mean, what's more important than your own brand, especially with all the different social media channels, platforms that we have, ways we can reach people more than ever before. And of course, I have a guest that really has done a remarkable job at doing that herself, Melanie Borden. Melanie, welcome to the KPI Cafe.
Thank you for having me, Dane.
So before we get really mine the insights from you, let's learn about where you came from. What's your origin story? How did you get into automotive or retail automotive?
So I started in automotive in 2009. I started working for a big public tech company after working in advertising for a few years. And I had this opportunity to work with car dealers, which I really knew nothing about. I didn't really know too much about the industry. And I absolutely loved it. And so from 2009 on, I worked for different tech companies. I worked for different startups. And at one point, one of the companies that I worked for had a program with Lexus, a digital marketing program with Lexus. They were the Lexus provider for all the websites. And during that time, I developed a relationship with a dealership called Lexus of Route 10. And flash forward to the end of 2017, the owner had asked me to come work for him and manage all of his dealerships, marketing and advertising strategies, and the rest is history.
Well, great.
Amen.
Well, you know, I'm going to have you back on then for some advertising strategy thoughts in addition to the branding. But, you know, for retail automotive, I mean, people really are, it's a very entrepreneurial industry, right? It's a lot of people, you know, building their brand, sort of cutting their own path. And, you know, a few things, of course, are more important than your own brand. And you've managed to build a terrific brand and subsequently a great following. I see like videos of yours all the time of like, you know, 45,000 views, you know, tons of comments, hundreds of likes. So clearly you got it working. Now, to get there, you know, it just didn't happen overnight. So for anyone who hasn't begun to build their own brand, what do they need to do to set the foundation?
It's a good question. So it's something like in an advertising strategy, right? You have certain benchmarks and you have certain KPIs that you're trying to hit. It's the same thing with personal branding. So with social media. So back in early 2020, I was looking for different ways for the sales teams to create their own personal brands. Now, up until January, I really wasn't active on social media at all. And so I created these branding guides and different social media workshops for the sales teams to kind of start working on their own personal brand, but I had none. I mean, other than people who knew me, you know, in the market, that was pretty much my brand. But I wanted to take that and make a name for myself online. But in order to do that, you need to have a plan. You can't just start posting. So I think number one is you need to determine what it exactly it is that you want out of social posting. For me, I wanted to make a name for myself. And what does that look like? It's opportunities, like coming on your show, for example, would be one example of an opportunity that would help enhance my name in the car business. So defining what those opportunities are and having a plan mapped out would be the first step in creating your own personal brand on social media.
Great. Now, I imagine it's not a one size fits all, but do you have like a platform you think is best for people to start on, or is it more of like a, just a personal perception on where they think they want to be?
So when I first started, I really hadn't been on any social at all, but I saw that there was this big opportunity with LinkedIn. And so I focused my efforts on LinkedIn because there's, I mean, even today, there's still such a huge opportunity. There's over, I think the stats that I read a couple of days ago is there's over 760 million users. There's like 220 million that are active, and less than 1% are actually posting. So I personally just saw a greater opportunity. And plus for me, it tied back into my goal. I want to create a name for myself, for my industry. Where is everyone in my industry? They're on LinkedIn. Yes, they're on other social too, but a lot of times they look as that as personal versus LinkedIn is more professional. So I started with LinkedIn. However, now in hindsight, I wish that I had started not just on LinkedIn. So since I started my journey, I also added on YouTube. I added on Instagram, and I had a Twitter account, but it was just sitting there. I didn't really do much with it. But I definitely recommend for anyone who's starting out, if you're not comfortable, just focus on the platform that you're comfortable with. And then as you get comfortable, you can always add on, but it's good to be everywhere for sure.
You know what I love about smart guests is that they answer questions I haven't asked yet. So it just, now I have to think of like a follow-up. So when you talk about, you know, different platforms, now you've gotten into YouTube, how do you scale that? Like clearly what you post, I would think what you post on Twitter is not the same exact as what you would on YouTube is not the same exact as you would on LinkedIn. Right. How do you scale that? What's a way so that people don't feel overwhelmed trying to just produce?
So this is how I would look at it. And this, I mean, it's very relatable for someone who works in marketing at a dealership or anyone who works in a dealership that's familiar with the process every single beginning of the month. The beginning of the month, the specials come out. Where do the specials go? The advertised specials, they go on the website. You talk to your agency partners, they go in your advertising. You talk to whoever is handling your social media, it goes on your social. So the same message is going in different areas. So my suggestion to anyone would be, you can create something that's called a content library. And a content library is basically just everything that you do, every video, every post, every photo. It's in one place and it makes scaling easier because you could just pull from one location and then just post to the other areas. Now, it is work. That's why not everybody does it, because it does take some effort. But it's something that is super simple once you get the hang of it. Just like at the beginning of the month, whether you're in the service department or you're in the sales department, you have a process and a strategy. It's the same thing for having your personal brand on social. Same thing.
Great. Now, so I use, for a lot of the social that I do, I use a tool, a website called Canva, which, you know, simplifies, you know, I'm no designer. I'm a copywriter by trade. And before I got in automotive, I also worked in an ad agency. Blah, I can't talk today. So it makes it real easy. Are there, do you use Canva? And if so, what other tools do you use? Like what's at your disposal that dealers can use to make this happen?
So Canva is great because it's not just a place where you can post from, because you can also post on social from Canva. You can create logos. You can, all you really need to know is like your guidelines for your brand. and you can literally create any type of content. I am not a graphic designer at all, but I, a lot of times, will go and I'll take reviews that we've had come in, and I'll take pieces of those reviews and I'll put them together on like a creative asset. And then we can use that for social, the salespeople can use it to post. So Canva is great for creating content using graphics. And you can also use images and have graphics on top of your images. It, you don't have to be a super creative person to use Canva. I love Canva. For the content library, I have a Dropbox account and I keep everything in Dropbox. So every time you see a post of mine, it's either been a post that I've used at some point in the last year or something new, but everything is housed directly in Dropbox. And then as far as other tools that I use, I mean, I post out of the native platform. I don't post from anything else other than the actual platform itself. So I post directly from LinkedIn. I post directly from Instagram. I post directly from Facebook. Now, some people say that that does impact the algorithm. I don't know if that's true or not. I can only go by my experience, and I think that it is true because I see people have less engagement when I know that they're using some sort of a tool versus posting directly from the app.
Okay, great. Yeah. Think of, you know, using these different platforms and posting different channels. Mm-hmm. Do you ask followers, like, do you like overtly ask them, like, follow me on YouTube, and on your YouTube, in your description, do you say follow me on these other platforms? Like, how do you build that audience on those different channels?
Sometimes I have posted before when I really started posting more on the other social channels. I did a post or two and I included, hey, by the way, I'm on YouTube, I'm on Instagram. I personally tend to just talk about the platform that I'm on.
Okay.
Personally, I've seen people that have posted that have huge followings on LinkedIn, and then I'll see them post something on Instagram and they're talking about LinkedIn. And I do talk about LinkedIn a lot on Instagram. So it happens, but I try to steer away from that. All of my videos that I do on LinkedIn, I also upload into Instagram and I upload them into YouTube. But I have the different URLs, for example. I have my website, and on my website, there are all the different social URLs that are on there if someone wanted to follow me on those different channels, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I know that a listener, a dealer could mine this and Google if they have, but do you have any like tips? Like, is there like a maximum on Instagram in terms of the duration of a video? Like, are there specific parameters that they should stick to that you know to be a best practice?
Yeah. So with Instagram, so what I've noticed, and I haven't really explored Reels to the extent on Instagram that you are capable of doing. Of course, the Reels that I see are all like fashion girls or, you know, someone doing makeup. Those are the Reels that I get served up in my feed. But I have not maximized the Reels ability, but I know they're generally 15 or 30 seconds. And then you can do Instagram TV, and that has to be over a minute. So if you have videos that are over a minute, they can go directly into Instagram TV. And, But I have not, just like with TikTok, I joined TikTok, but I'm not active on TikTok, but I'm on it to learn, to understand how it works. And I think it's going to be something really big coming soon. Just like how I thought LinkedIn was going to be really big. TikTok is really big, but it's going to get even bigger from an ads perspective. I think it's going to really blow up.
Great. Before I move on to the next segment, I got to ask, are you a Clubhouser? Are you active on Clubhouse yet, or?
So I joined Clubhouse a few weeks ago and I have gone on. I have not formulated a strategy for Clubhouse yet. I mean, generally, I set some goals for myself at the beginning of the year in terms of things that I wanted to learn from a knowledge perspective. I want to get better with media. I want to get better with PR. And I want to be able to use those newfound skills to help strengthen what I do for the group. So when I go onto Clubhouse now, I specifically look for rooms that talk about those items and that also talk about Clubhouse, so I can learn more. But other than that, that's pretty much as active as I've been, but it's great. It's like an interactive podcast. It's interactive LinkedIn. It's amazing for learning and I love it. I think it's great.
I just had to ask, cause yeah, that seems to be the hot platform right now. And I'm woefully incompetent when it comes to it. Cause I have an account, but I have not really done more than dabble in by jumping into a few rooms and just listening for a few minutes.
It's great for listening. I like it for outside our industry. Yes, there are a tremendous amount of people in our industry, specifically in the marketing realm, that are on Clubhouse. But I like listening to people who are outside our outside the marketing industry in auto, because they have a different perspective and they have different fresh ideas that we might not necessarily be talking about in automotive. And it gives just a different concept to a campaign or, you know, just a strategy for something. And I really like that for Clubhouse.
I like that perspective. And that was one of the things that drove our reunion social media platform, was seeing how other industries were approaching it, and not saying like, you have to be Amazon, you have to be this company, but there are things from this industry we can take that are clearly applicable to retail automotive that's just not being done. So that's a really great perspective about leveraging Clubhouse beyond just your little like microcosm ecosystem of people you know.
Absolutely. And I think for some, what I've seen so far is, you know, there are a lot of people who are personal development coaches and individuals that have their own businesses. And I think it's really great for those people as well, because they can come on, and even for an individual car dealer, I think would be a great way to talk about, you know, what they do and what they experience every day. And that will help drive, you know, more awareness for their brand and for their business.
Great. So think of branding. So kind of going back on just the core concept of branding. So does branding yourself as a member of a dealership inherently build the dealership's brand? Or should your branding include like the actual products and services that you offer, like actually promoting the dealership itself?
I think you can do both. I think you absolutely can do both. I'm in a unique position because I work in marketing. So although any person who works for a dealership is in sales, in my opinion, because you're representing the business that you work for, and that goes for any business. If you work for any business or you're in sales, if there's some sort of consumer product, because anyone could be buying it and you're representing the business. I do think there's a way to build yourself up as an individual, and it will organically increase. So for example, Celebrity Motor Cars is the parent company name of the group that I work for. We don't generally advertise as Celebrity Motor Cars. However, we have gained all these followers on LinkedIn, and it's not from us advertising and being active. Recently, I started interweaving some posting into our channel, but it will happen organically. And for someone in sales, you have such a big opportunity if you talk about ways that your product has helped other people or ways that it can help someone without being salesy. So there is definitely a way to interweave who you are as a person and your individuality. And you could also talk about things about the business that you work for, you know, different models, especially for someone in sales. There's such a huge, huge opportunity.
Great. And so think about, I like that, you know, everyone in your dealership is sort of in sales because they represent your brand. And that's actually a statement that is so glaringly obvious, but has never been said to me before like that, that I really like that perspective. So that actually lends itself then to my next question. And so, you know, there are different operations in a dealership, and, you know, with the pandemic, there's been a lot of focus on fixed ops. Mm-hmm. You know, so should a director of marketing or a BDC director, GM, be the face of the brand, or is there opportunity for the fixed ops team, a jockey, an advisor, a tech, a director, to build their own brand? Are there other opportunities in the dealership for people to build their brands?
Absolutely. There's opportunity for everyone. There doesn't need to be one exclusive person that's posting on social on behalf of a dealership, because at the end of the day, Dane, if you have multiple people from your dealership that are posting on social and using specific hashtags and being able to promote the business name, that's just more advertising. It's just more advertising that's being done. And if you're doing paid social, like most stores are doing, it just lends itself to your overall marketing strategy. But yeah, absolutely. If someone is committed and dedicated, it takes a lot of work. So that's why you find that most people don't do it, because it takes strategy, it takes patience, it takes consistency, and it's work. But for someone who really can see the long-term benefits of promoting themselves in the dealership that they work for on social, It's definitely well worth it.
Love it. And, you know, long-term benefits, that's like, for me, that's the operative phrase, long-term benefits. So how do you measure the success or long-term benefits of your branding efforts?
Well, that's a good question. And that's the number one question that I think that every single person is asking right now. How do you determine, you know, the effectiveness or that it's working? So the best way that you can determine a success of your social posting, obviously number one is the engagement, right? So are people interacting with your posts? Are they liking your posts? Are they watching your videos? Are they commenting on your videos? Are they commenting on your posts, your static posts? And that's would be number one. And then number two is it generating opportunities? Which it will. But opportunities can be defined very differently based on what your goals are with what you want to do with social posting. So an opportunity, for example, could be, I want to be on a podcast, right? Podcast opportunities and invites could be an opportunity. A new customer could be an example of an opportunity. Connecting with someone who's at a C-level position at a different company within the industry, that could be considered an opportunity. But opportunities will come. I know people that I work with that have generated car sales directly from social, whether it's LinkedIn or a specific group on Facebook. It happens. You are able to generate opportunities in the sense of dollars. Long term. It doesn't happen overnight. Doesn't happen in the first month. Sometimes it can, but it's something that you have to look at as a long-term commitment.
Great. Now, before we end today, because I know we have limited time and I want to kind of get through everything, but I also want to give you a shameless plug here, because I've been following you a long time and we had an exchange of communication about something that was in the works you were doing before it was really fully known. Yeah. So you recently became an author. Tell us a little bit about that.
I did. So I wrote a children's book. Thank you for bringing that up. I appreciate that. I wrote a children's book. So last year when COVID happened, obviously it was very confusing and upsetting. And there was so much going on for everyone all over the world. And during that time, that's really when I had set out to, you know, really start posting a lot on social, and I wanted to create my name for myself in the industry. And I was invited to be on different leadership panels with women that are in the auto industry. And the one thing that I really learned was there were so many other women just like me, whether they worked at dealerships or they worked as a vendor or wherever they are, that had children that were going through the same thing as me. And the other piece that I was learning is that there's really no awareness for young kids on what women do in the industry. There's really not. There are some books that are out there, but not that talk about everyone in all the different departments and what they do in those departments. So it was basically a distraction project for me. It was something fun that I really looked forward to working on. And it is something that, you know, people talk about writing a book. People say that they're going to do it. And along the way, it's funny because so many people have said to me, I can't believe that you actually did it. Thanks. I mean, like, I had planned to do it, but yes, I followed through and I completed it. But the message really is that there are so many unbelievable women that work in car dealerships, and there's just not a lot of visibility. And if that's one thing that I can do with this network that I've built up and this platform that I've been able to maximize, is to help create awareness that there are so many types of positions that are at a retail store for women. And a lot of moms are working at dealerships, and just a lot of women, a lot of aunts, a lot of grandmas, a lot of cousins and sisters, and you name it. There are so many women that work in dealerships. And that was really the message of the book when I put it together.
Great. And what's the title of it? What's it called? How can people find
it? The title of the book is called Our Mommy Works with Cars.
Our Mommy Works with Cars. Great. Yes. Look it up. If you want a positive message, make for sure you find that book. Melody, before I let you go, we're going to play a quick little game I've been playing with everybody, every guest. Now, I chose this game because I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which is like, a weird combination of like New York language and linguistics with like the Midwest.
Okay. So it's,
there's some phrases and words that are really unique and sometimes exclusive to Pittsburgh. So I'm going to say a word and I'll keep it quick. We got two words. I'm going to say a word. If you want to take a guess at what it is, take a guess. If you're totally confused, I'll use it in a sentence and let's see if we can figure this out. How's that sound?
Okay.
All right. So the first word, slippy.
Like a bathtub, like something that you put on the bathtub to not slip.
So we're on the right track. So here's the sentence. Be careful. The sidewalk is so slippy.
Oh, if it's like ice on the sidewalk or if it's wet?
Slippery. Yeah. Slippy is, we say, instead of saying slippery, we somehow got rid of a couple letters there and we say slippy. In
Pittsburgh. Oh, okay.
Now this one will be a little more obvious because this is a little more regional than just relegated to like Pittsburgh versus everywhere else. Mm-hmm. So the word is pop.
Soda.
There, yep. In other regions, a lot of people say soda. In the South, I was recently living in North Carolina, and it's soda down there. If you say pop, they don't know what in the hell you mean. And up here in Pittsburgh, when you say soda, they're like, what are you talking about?
That's so funny. I thought that was a Southern thing.
Oh, really? Oh, pop.
I guess I'm wrong.
Pittsburgh and Ohio, it's relevant. In North Carolina, South Carolina, it's soda. And when you say the other ones, they're just befuddled by what you mean.
That's so funny. Oh, well, where you know.
All right. Well, thank you for playing, Melanie. Thank you also for spending some time out of your busy schedule to lend your insights on branding. I really appreciate you joining the KPI Cafe today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
And everyone, thank you for listening in. Next week, we're going to have Sandy Olive, one of Reunion's first employees and current leader in our design department. She's joining to talk about Reunion's culture committee and how you can develop the same program at your dealership to build morale, get buy-in, and improve overall operations. And don't forget to subscribe to the KPI Cafe and your favorite podcast platform, as well as on our YouTube channel to never miss an insight. Again, Melanie Bordens, thank you so much for joining us. And everyone, thank you for tuning in.
Thank you.